My topic is about Plotinus' use of Empedocles, and particularly this philia and nikos, these two powers that Empedocles introduces, the power of attraction and the power of repulsion. So I will try to show that Empedocles is an important thinker for Plotinus, in contrast to some modern observations about this issue. I would like to start with a few words about the pre-Socratics in Plotinus and the Ennians. Plotinus uses frequently the pre-Socratics, and particularly Heraclitus, Empedocles, Pythagoras and the Pythagoreans, Anaxagoras. There is one reference to Pherecydes, and of course Parmenides. It is interesting that Empedocles can be found by name references five times in the Ennians, and more than Aristotle in some cases. And it is really interesting that some of the fragments that we have and the testimonies that we have from Plotinus are not referenced to Diels. So it is very interesting to consider and reconsider the use of Empedocles in Plotinus' Ennians. So Plotinus usually doesn't treat the pre-Socratics as pre-Socratics, but more as pre-Platonists, as forerunners of Plato. Of course, godlike Plato is the most important thinker for Plotinus. But when he is using the pre-Socratics, if we can use, or the early Greek philosophers, we see that Plotinus uses them with a careful way. Of course, he is not a historian of philosophy. We don't expect to have extant fragments and testimonies about the pre-Socratics, but he seems to treat them with respect as individual three thinkers that seems to be the beginners of Greek philosophy. So, I think that this use of the pre-Socratics in the Ennians, in a way, counters the opinions in modern scholarship that the pre-Socratics were not so much important for Plotinus. I think we have to see Plotinus, as I mentioned, more as a philosopher, not as a historian of philosophy. So, in this case, I would like to say that Empedocles seems to influence two main aspects in Plotinus' philosophy. The first one is metaphysics through his natural philosophy. He's referring to the four elements. He's referring to the two different powers that we mentioned, love and strife, philia and nikos. But also, he's mentioning the theory of the soul, Empedocles' theory of the soul, and particularly in fragment 115. So, in the handout I have given you, there are actually two fragments from Empedocles, which I think is very important, fragment 17 and fragment 115. So, in these two fragments, there is a reference, sometimes a direct reference of Plotinus in these two fragments. In passage number one, just very briefly, we will see referring to the four elements, also love and strife. In passages 2, 3, 4, and 5, we have a reference to intellect and how it is related to the soul and the cosmos. And finally, the passage number 6, which is a passage mentioning the soul and the descent of the soul into this world. So, in Empedocles, the principles of philia and nikos and the four roots are deathless. They are athanata, actually. Whereas the four roots are the internal material elements with no beginning or end in time or spatial variation, addition or abstraction, love and strife are the internal motive in corporeal powers of attraction and repulsion that both combine and separate the elements within the cosmic cycle. So, Empedocles describes this process in two different opposing or conflicting phases, one corresponding to the increasing dominance of love and the mixing of the four elements, and the other to the increasing dominance of strife and the separation of the elements. So, if we look at, which I think is the most important, passage number 1 from Aeneid 5.1, we see that Plotinus refers with a strange combination, strange way, between three different pre-Socratics. Again, Anaxagoras, in calling mind pure and unmixed, is affirming the primary as simple and the one as transcendent. But because of his antiquity, he has neglected precision. Heraclitus also knows that the one is internal and intelligible, since bodies are always coming to be and are in flux. For Empedocles, strife divides, love is the one. He too makes this incorporeal, and the elements serve as matter. Just to note that Kreuzer suggests that there is another also possible reading of Ιδε φιλία το εν. He mentions Ιδε φιλία ενή, which is a correction of Albert, the editor of Kirill, but I think that correctly has been demolished by Henry in this case. So I think that this passage is very important. Firstly, for the use of Anaxagoras, Heraclitus, and Empedocles, and also that we can divide actually this passage in two different parts. The first part, where we have a reference to strife, which that divides, that love is the one, that Plotinus speaks that they are asomata. There is also the elements that are serve as matter. These two different aspects of this particular passage shows, I think, that there is an interesting discussion about the corporeality of the two different powers in Empedocles. This is a controversial issue, actually, also in modern scholars. Brunet and Kirk and Raven, they suggest that love and strife are corporeal. Here, Plotinus seems to follow the incorporeality, at least, of philia. If we want to be very careful, I think he doesn't mention about Nikos. So, philia, which is actually identified with the one, is incorporeal. This is also the reading of Simplicius. Also Aristotle accepts this view. Alexander of Aphrodisias, again, we have this reference about the incorporeality of these two powers. So Plotinus is another source towards this interpretation. It is, I think, striking for me that DLS has not included this passage from Aeneid 5.1 in his edition of the Pre-Socratics, at least in the testimonies. So, in further analyzing this passage, I think that firstly we have a reply to what Atkinson, in his commentary on Aeneid 5.1, said, that I'm using his own words. Empedocles' doctrines are referred in the Aeneid in a handful of places, but his thought had no great influence on the Aeneid. I'm going to disagree with this position. I think that Empedocles is important for Plotinus' philosophy, and in particular his conception of love as power, as dunamis. I found it closer to Plotinus' metaphysics of the one as dunamis panto in this case. However, I'm going to suggest some further issues of interest in reading this particular passage in Aeneid 5.1. The first is the incorporeality of love that we mentioned. So maybe we have to reconsider the issue of incorporeality in terms of love. The second discussion is a question about how far Empedocles is a monist or a pluralist. This question, Aristotle considers him as a pluralist. In this passage, I have the feeling that Plotinus considers Empedocles as a monist. He recognizes these two different powers, but probably through his own metaphysics of the one, his own monism, he considers philia as more important than nikos. In this case, this is a second suggestion. A third suggestion coming from this one, can we name that nikos is a byproduct of philia? In this case, this is a very interesting discussion in relation to Plotinus' use of the Pythagorean tolma, the audacity of the soul, but also I think that we once had love. A fourth issue is about the discussion about good and evil, how far love is related to the source of evil, is the source of good, as Nikos is the source of evil. Aristotle seems to follow this idea and suggest that there is a goodness in love and there is also kind of evilness in Nikos. I don't think that it is clear, first of all, in Empedocles. Of course, the terms that he is using, maybe they are referring to the goodness of love and the evilness of Nikos, but I don't see it clearly in this passage. I think that strife is that which divides, while love is the one. It's not something that unites. It is the one. It is a very strong identification with his first principle. Finally, I'm going to suggest an argument that this conception of love as dunamis and identification with the one could be an argument that justifies that when Plotinus refers to the one as dunamis panto, the power of all things, has in mind a power of unity. So, we know that the one is the first principle in Plotinus' metaphysics, and the one is frequently defined as dunamis panton. So, if philia is the dunamis of unity, and philia is identified with the one in this passage, could we suggest that the one is the power of unity of all things, or at least one aspect of the one? So, what about Nikos? This is a very interesting term, so we can speak about one. I think, indeed, it's the most controversial term in Plotinus. It's very difficult to discuss, and Atkinson notes, and I will share with him his anxiety in this topic, said how Plotinus could fit strife into his philosophy is left quite unclear, he said. It is not noticeable that does not make any identification as regards this divisible principle. I think that, first of all, indeed, it's a very difficult idea. Where is Nikos in this case? Where is Nikos in this absolute unity of the one? Where can we place Nikos? I think that a careful reading of this passage will help us. I think that the word diere maybe is a key to understand how Plotinus conceived Nikos in this particular term. So, ideresis is a very important term. And passage number 2 will help us in this conception of diéresis. What is this diéresis, actually? What is this division? But the division which is in intellect is not of things confused, though of things existing in unity. But this is what is called the love in the all, not the love in this all, for this is an imitation, since it is a loving of things which are separate, but the true love is all things one and never separated. But Empedocles said that what is within this our sky is separated. Of course, Empedocles is not mentioned in the end, it's actually Armstrong's addition in the translation. So, I would suggest that probably if we see this scheme of Plotinus' metaphysics, if I can mention this one, sorry.
So if we have the three hypotheses of being, we have the one, intellect, soul, and nous, psyche. So if we identify feeling with the one, and division with nous, so nous divides, so a possible interpretation could be that the first division of the one is at the level of intellect, where the one is one man. It clearly is justified, especially the previous chapter than 519, which is a discussion that we had. It is in 518, where also Plotinus refers also to Parmenides, and he's criticizing Parmenides for not speaking about one thing, but about many things, when he speaks about the symmetry of things, the signs of things. So he considers that Parmenides refers not to the one, even we have this long discussion, but Plato's Parmenides is more accurate on this direction. So what is, when we have the first division, happens in what Plotinus calls prose, procession, when the first effluence of the one creates a kind of intelligible matter. The term that he's using as synonymous is the indefinite dyad. And why it is indefinite? Because it is going to be defined as nous afterwards through a reversing process, a returning process to its own self. So, my first reading is that if philia is identified with the one, I think that indefinite dyad could be related to nous as the first division of the one. So, furthermore, I think that Plotinus, because he is using philia at different ontological levels, he's using the absolute philia of the one, the philia of intellect, the philia of the soul, the philia between the different souls, the interpersonal relationships. So all these ontologies of power that connected through philia are coming usually through the reversing process from the soul that is contemplating through the purification the nous, intellect, when intellect returns to the one. So the phase of reversion, the phase of return, could be related to philia, while the process of procession, where we have a procession, a divisibility of being, could be related to the process of nikos. So in this case, indeed, nikos is a byproduct of the one, pluralizing itself. Of course, you understand it's a very complicated and controversial issue. And of course, it's just a scheme. I don't know how far it could depict the whole feeling of Plotinus. In passages number 3 and 4, we will see how philia and nikos are related to unity and plurality. In passage number 3, the whole life of intellect and the whole intellect lives and thinks all together in unity, and makes that part the whole and all bound in friendship, in philia, with itself, since one part is not separated from the other. This is the one-many condition. And has not become merely other, estranged from the rest, and therefore one does not wrong another, even they are opposites. So this idea of opposition, but not only, also of otherness, could be also related to nikos. If one is sameness, otherness could be related also to nikos. In passage number 4, for from that true cosmos which is one, this cosmos comes into existence, which is not truly one, for it is many and divided into a multiplicity, and one part stands away from another and is alien to it. And there is not only friendship but also enmity because of the separation, and in their deficiency one part is of necessity at war with another. For the part is not self-sufficient, but in being preserved is at war with the other by which it is preserved.
I think that this is significant that in passage number 4, Plotinus uses the term echthra and not nikos. Of course, it's a term that is used by Empedocles synonymously, right? But also it is mentioned in Symplikius source. So we can accept that echthra is a synonym of nikos. In this fragment, Empedocles, like Plotinus, stresses the connection between what can be mixed and is brought together in unity by philia, and what is kept apart in multiplicity and enmity by strife. This is also justified in Theophrastus. Τον πολλάτε και ένεστη. Έκθρα δε και φιλία συνέχεται. Again in passage number 4, Plotinus relies again on Empedocles' concept of philia and ekthra in order to express the natural but necessary antithesis between unity and plurality, cohesiveness and separation, concordance and discordance, at the level of the perceptible world. The fact that parts of the universe are friendly to one another while others are hostile, he explains, does not prevent them from being all in harmony with the entire world order. Predictably, to explain the opposition between the two Empedoclean powers, Plotinus adopts a Platonic metaphysical, I think, perspective in this case. The logoi of the soul, he explains, proceed from the unity and multiplicity of intellect, and soul is a unity and plurality, not unity in plurality, divided into organic parts, some of which are friendly and gentle, while others are hostile and at war. This being so, it is necessary to postulate at the level of the soul an antithesis between friendship and enmity, in order to account for the lesser unity and the greater separation characteristic of that level. So as far as we go down to the levels, we see the more conflicting aspects of these two different powers. So at the level of the soul, we have this constant contrast and conflict between love and strife. The philion between the parts of the universe is an expression of the unity of the higher philia in the intelligible realm. Friendship is a power of the soul which is derived from the ontological unity and the homogeneity of intellect. It is a power that brings together all parts of the soul in a harmonious concordance of opposite powers, in a single universal sympathy of being. The philia of cosmos is an image of the intelligible unity that itself derives from the absolute unity of the One. True philia for Plotinus is close to the absolute unity of all things beyond any form or separation. This is also what Empedocles is saying in fragment 22. So, love and strife work in the individual level and the cosmos. In the same way, love and hate are the most powerful forces in human life, by which we are attracted to some humans and hostile to others. This is how things are, and the resulting behavior as friends or enemies is up to us, says Empedocles. So, Plotinus continues to see these two opposing powers in a very interesting, we have also discussed in another seminar about these passages. His passage number 5, Menet 4:4, concerning magic. So his question is, but how do magic spells work? By sympathy and by the fact that there is a natural concord of things that are alike and opposition of things that are different, and by the rich variety of the many powers which go to make up the life of the one living creature. For many things are drawn and enchanted without anyone else's magical contrivance, and the true magic is the love and also the strife in the all. And this is the primary wizard and enchanter, from observing whom men came to use his philtres and spells on each other. Kingsley refers explicitly in Ennead 4:4 and reads Plotinus' phrase ογόης ο πρώτος και φαρμακεύς ούτος as an indirect reference to Empedocles and his myth as a wizard. However, Plotinus may refer in a general to a figure of the magician, or he is going actually to personify nature in this way that combines the cosmic forces of philia and strife. I think that there is also a reference to Aristotle and his note on the Magian Metaphysics. As Armstrong notes, Plotinus makes clear that magic is a manipulation of natural forces, attractions and sympathies, resulting from the living organic unity of the physical universe. Plotinus seems to be influenced in this case by the Stoic idea of cosmic sympathy. For Plotinus, the magic spells work because of the natural organic interconnection of opposing forces within the universe. While the positive force of concordance brings together things that are alike, we have the symphonia omion, the negative force of division separates things that are different, we have enadiosis anomion. The former force correspond to Empedocles' philia, the latter to Empedocles' strife. The key concept is this issue is again unity. Similarly, in Ennead 4.9, another case, Plotinus speaks again about the forces of magic, where the cosmic sympathy is again related to philia. The wizard's magic spells work because of the unity and the cosmic sympathy of the soul. Since the soul is one, the magician can exercise his practice at a distance by using the power of cosmic sympathy via the continuum of the universal soul idiom. This actually gives us a further discussion of how philia and nikos could be related to the individual souls. And probably one of the most important passages is passage number 6 from Ennead 4.8 on the descent of the soul into the bodies. And Empedocles, Plotinus said, when he said that it is a law that sinful souls should fall into this world, and that he himself has come here as an exile from God, who puts his trust in raving strife, he reveals just as much as the riddling statements of Pythagoras and his followers about the descent of the soul and many other matters. But he is a clear because of his poetry, Plotinus mentions. In this passage, Plotinus refers directly to Empedocles' account of the descent of the demon and the Pythagorean concept of the embodied soul. This passage connects Empedocles with the early Pythagoreans. Empedocles and the Pythagoreans are obscure in their account of the descent of the soul, but Empedocles is obscure not so much because of his theory, but because of his poetry, of his poetic language. Plotinus alludes to Empedocles' fragment 115. This is actually the fragment that is behind this text. The account of the soul as demon, which descends into the material world, passing through a number of lives, and born in all elements as different kind of mortal beings. In this passage especially, Plotinus with Phygas Theothen and Pisinos Menomeno, Nike, he quotes directly part of the last two lines of fragment 115. Phygas Theothen και Αλήτης, Νίκη Μενόμενο Πίσινος, which is actually mentioned in the first page of the handout. For the latter lines, Plotinus, along with Philoponus, Asclepius, and Heracles, is a recognized source. Philoponus also characterized this as το πολυθρύλητο. This is well known, and probably we have to accept that Plotinus quotes, as in this case, from memory. We don't have to accept that he has a source, a book near him. All about Philotis and Nikos and Phygas Theothen is a reference that can be quoted from memory. I think that Plotinus wants to focus on the last two lines and not the whole of Empedocles' fragments. It is also interesting that Empedocles' account of the faulty soul into the material world reflects also the den, the antron, in fragment 120, which is reported by Porphyry. We know that Porphyry was the most eminent pupil of Plotinus. And Plotinus himself, some lines later, he mentions fragment 120 when he compares Empedocles' den with Plato's cave. A summary of these two fragments are related to Plotinus and a very interesting term, the term phygi, the escape to God, how we have to escape from this world. And with Brian, we have cooperated 1 year ago in Copenhagen about this issue of purification of the soul and how we have found that some virtue ethics aspects could be related to this idea of escaping to God and the phygi, coming from Theaetetus. Plotinus denies the pessimistic idea of an erring soul that falls into the body and replaces with an optimistic one in this case, considering the descent of soul as a kind of spiritual mission. This is also a point that I would like to support, the idea that for Plotinus it's not clear that at the highest level of one intellect we have this moral context of love and strife. I think that he accepts that love brings together things in attraction, while Nikos divides. Of course, at the lower level, this division becomes probably the source of evil. And this is how matter is related to this discussion, but we will discuss it a little bit later. In Ennead 4.8, Plotinus maintains that the descent of the soul into the body is not a decline, nor a fall, but an illumination of intelligible perfection. This is important to understand that for Plotinus, criticizing the Pythagoreans, it's not the soul in the body, but the body in the soul. So the body is a reflection, an extension of the soul. So he wants to criticize some pessimistic readings found in some Pythagorean text. Also, he is skeptical about Plato's Phaedo. He seems to prefer Plato's Timaeus, which seems to have a more positive view of the material world. The works of soul are not evil or sinful, but an eternal manifestation of the divine goodness. Plotinus states that the fall, amartia, of soul can refer to two different things. Amartia in ancient Greek is not kind of the sin, it's not translated as a sin, that usually is translated sometimes as just a fault of the soul. So we have the motive of soul descent, and to the evil actions that soul does in this world. As in Empedocles fragment 115, describes himself as an exiled demon that belongs to the divine nature, Plotinus in 4.4.1 describes himself as an inhabitant of a higher divine realm. And this actually is referring to the first lines of Ennead 4.8, where Plotinus presents his own self-deification experience. It's usually criticized as a mystical experience, where he sees himself outside of the body, and he is wondering how he is born in this world, if he is belonging to a higher intelligible realm. For the soul, it is necessary by the internal law of nature to experience its descent and the life of the material world in order to recognize the perfection of the intelligible world and ascend to the higher divine realm. For Plotinus, the error lies in the attitude of the embodied soul and not in the nature of the material world. The material world, as a work of divine providence, is the best possible reflection of the intelligible world. The embodied soul, or the ensouled bodies, if you like this difference in the approach, is not in bitter and miserable Uranus. Desires and fears and evil seems to be presentations of the bodies, which are in between the soul and matter. For Plotinus, the real fault of the individual souls is its individuality, is its individuation, its divisibility. The descent into bodies is the consequence of this fault. And here Plotinus brings a term which I think is very interesting related to Nikos. It's the Pythagorean term tolma. Audacity, tolma, brings the coming to birth, genesis, the first otherness, the proti heterotis, and consequently the desire for individuality and self-isolation, said Plotinus. Tolma was the Pythagorean name from the indefinite dyad, because it separated itself from the One. For Plotinus, the indefinite dyad, or intelligible matter, he is using the Aristotelian term in this case, is related to the amorphous being and the first effluence of the One. Corporeal matter, on the other hand, is pure negation and sterility of form. Both matters are related to otherness, intelligible matter to otherness in active potentiality, informed by intellect's return to the One, as we see in the scheme. Corporeal matter is otherness in passive potentiality, informed by the soul. In a passage in Ennead 5.9, we read that this Plotinus describes intellect's generation from the One as an act of tolma. Intellect is not dispersed in itself, but is in reality altogether with itself, and its nearness after the One has kept it from dividing itself. Thought it did somehow dare to stand away from the One. Plotinus refers in this passage again to the Pythagorean tolma. In the light of the above passage, a connection could be established between the Plotinus notion of self-individuality, Empedocles Nikos, and the Pythagorean tolma. This is also exemplified in expression soul's unquiet power. The Plotinian soul has this inner, unquiet power which is responsible for its own self-isolation, and by extension for its descent. As Plotinus says in a parallel passage in Ennead 3.7, the soul includes an officious nature, physis polypragmons, an unquiet power, dynamis ouch isikos, which continually wishes to produce something more than it possesses. This officious and unquiet nature of 3.7 has to be identified with Avdasit, the self-inclination of power described in Ennead 4.8, as the cause of soul's descent into the corporeal world. In Ennead 3.7, the officious nature of soul drives the soul to transfer continuously what it sees in the intelligible world to something else, without wanting to be present altogether in the intelligible realm. This is actually the genesis of the soul. As intellect moves from absolute unity to otherness and a unified plurality, the soul moves from intellect's sameness and the self-identity to the otherness of the souls and the cosmos. In my view, however, Plotinus reverses the Empedoclean phygi. So whereas for Empedocles, the phygi, the escape, it's a phygi from a god, from the many things to this world, Plotinus wants to reverse this phygi, and this phygi to becomes a kind of purification, an escape not from God, but an escape to God. And this happens in different ways. One of the way is the purification of the soul and the reversion of the soul to intellect and then to the intellect to One. So in this case, Philia and Nikos, as I suggested at the beginning, might be also related to the two creative phases, the phase of procession, prodos, and reversion, which is the epistrophe, also the phygi. Whereas procession is a progress from unity to multiplicity, from a higher hypostasis to a lower one, reversion is a return from multiplicity to unity, from a lower hypostasis of being to a higher one. At the phase of procession, intellect remains indefinite, as the indefinite dyad, aoristos, until at the phase of reversion becomes defined, orizeta, and becomes known. So its hypostasis is defined at two different stages, at the procession and in the reversion. So the procession becomes indefinite and becomes defined by returning to its higher hypostasis. We could relate procession with this division that Nikos may represent, and reversion as a more unified process back to the higher hypostasis as related to Philia. Summarizing this discussion, I would like to point out again this conclusions that firstly reply to Atkinson's idea that Empedocles was not important for Plotinus, and secondly to what is probably the role of Nikos in the Enneads. First of all, Plotinus conceives philia, and probably strife, I'm not sure about this, as incorporeal powers that act at all ontological levels. One possibility is that strife, as far as it is related to the intelligible matter, could be related to a material conception of being, but not the corporeal conception of being, but the incorporeal conception of being related to the intelligible matter. Strife should not be conceived initially as the source of evil, but rather as the cause of division. At the level of the corporeal bodies, this divisibility could be the reason of evil. However, only in terms of soul's individuation and self-isolation. At the level of the one, love and strife have not a moral or ethical connotation, good evil. Love is the source of unity, strife is the source of plurality. I think also that Plotinus, in the light of his monies, gives a priority, a metaphysical priority to philia, which is, I think, very interesting because this goes against Empedocles' idea, which considers that philia and nikos are at the same power, at the same level. So Plotinus seems to give a priority to philia. In these terms, nikos could be related, regarded as a byproduct of philia, related to the first otherness and the first effluence of the one, which is actually indefinite dyad and the first divisibility of being intelligible matter. So Plotinus seems to consider Empedocles as a monist and not as a pluralist. It is noteworthy that Aristotle criticized Empedocles' economy of powers for using the two powers. He considers that you just need one, since both love and strife create and separate the elements. So what is the need for these two different powers? Plotinus tends to follow this criticism, but by keeping both power at different phases of metaphysical creation. In contrast to Empedocles' pluralism, for Plotinus, generation moves initially from one to many, and not from many to the one. Since Nikos divides and philia unites, they could be also related to the dual phase of the creation of hypostasis I mentioned before. Whereas procession identified with Nikos is a process from unity to multiplicity, from a higher hypostasis to a lower one, a reversion, epistrophe, philia, is a return from multiplicity to unity, from the lower hypostasis of being to the higher one. Finally, Plotinus' identification of philia with the one may lead us to the following argument. Since the Plotinian one is the first principle defined as dunamis pandon, and the Empedoclean philia is a dunamis of unity, therefore the one as dunamis pandon could be interpreted as the power of unity of all things. I think that the above observations show the importance of Empedocles' philosophy in Plotinus, and especially his theory of love and strife in the Enneads. Thank you very much.